What is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy July. That's right. It is July 1st, 2015, and you are locked into Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We have a great show in store for you all as we recap last night's United States women's national soccer team win over Germany. What a win it was. They certainly got some help from the refs, if you ask me. But, hey, it's a win nonetheless. They are now in the finals and will take on the winner of either Japan or England. So how about that? We'll recap what happened last night. We'll also invite the new sports reporter and anchor over at WILX TV 10 right here in mid-Michigan, Zach Berich. You do not want to miss that, as he'll recap his road right here back to mid-Michigan, where he actually went to school at here at Michigan State University. And we bring Barbershop Wednesday to you. Could Brett Favre still play in today's NFL? You don't want to miss that heated debate. And so much more. We'll be taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start this party like we always do. Without further ado, here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this July 1st. All right, the veteran United States women's soccer side earned another chance at World Cup glory on Tuesday, reaching the final for the second time in a row by beating top-ranked Germany 2-0. Japan and England meet in the other semifinal today in Edmonton. The winner will move on to face the U.S. of A. in the title game on Sunday in Vancouver. We'll recap what took place yesterday in just a sec. Don't touch that dial. All right, Michigan football coach Jim Harbaugh vehemently defended himself Tuesday night against accusations that his policy is pressuring players to retire due to medical issues. Now, the change came from defensive tackle Andre Pipkins last week on ESPN.com, who said that Harbaugh and the staff at U of M repeatedly wanted him to sign a form ending his career due to injuries. Quote, "We don't run off players," end quote, he said after throwing out the first pitch at Comerica Park. Zach Indenstraff, who previously served as an assistant athletic communications director at U of M, has been named director of internal communications and operations for head football coach Jim Harbaugh. Now, the newly created position, posted 2 weeks ago on U of M's career website, is most similarly to assist football, the football coach in all areas, including day-to-day operations, communications, office management, and administration. I'm pretty sure Jim Harbaugh is going to have Zach as one busy man this upcoming year. All right, Neil Walker's double down the right field line scored the go-ahead run, and get this, the 14th inning, as the Pittsburgh Pirates outlasted the Detroit Tigers 5-4 on Tuesday night at Comerica Park. Now, neither team broke the 5-5 tie until the 14th, when Josh Harrison doubled off lefty reliever Tom Gorzolani, and Walker drove in a batter later. Now, Justin Verlander pitched into the seventh inning. Alfredo Simon, coming off two of his worst starts of the year, takes the hill tonight. The Lansing Lugnuts, their offense scored four runs in the first four innings, paving the way for a Sean Reed Foley win in Lansing's 5-4 victory over the South Bend Cubs Tuesday from Four Winds Field. Lansing scored two in the first, one in the second, and David Harris hit his first home run in the fourth, giving the Lugs a three-run edge. The Detroit Red Wings, they locked up another of their restricted free agents, signing defenseman Brendan Smith. Now, Smith will have a salary cap hit of $2.75 million over the next 2 years, which will take him a year into unrestricted free agency. Now, Smith brings the number of defensemen under contract to now six for the Red Wings. The New Orleans Pelicans, this be good news for Isaac Constance behind the glass as he pumps his fist right now. The New Orleans Pelicans and Anthony Davis on the first day possible have agreed to terms on a mammoth contract extension that should become the league's richest when it goes into effect, according to league sources. Now, sources told ESPN.com that the Pelicans and Davis have agreed to, get this, a five-year extension estimated at nearly $145 million that will kick in the start of the 2016-17 season and run through Davis's 28th birthday. With that contract, Davis will become the highest-paid player in the National Basketball Association. And last but not least, former NFL quarterback Brett Favre told Sports Illustrated's Greg Bishop that he believes he could still play in the league. Now, Favre is on the cover of this week's SI in the annual Where Are They Now issue. At age 45, Favre has been out of the NFL for more than 4 years. He announced his retirement multiple times before finally walking away from the game for good in 2011 after 2 years with the Minnesota Vikings. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in, comment on any of those or anything that happens to be on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports or even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. Without further ado, it is that time to start the show.
Possession. Nice cutting ball in the box. Lloyd on the dribble, looks, cuts, shot, go! 2-0 U.S. Kelly O'Hara. How about this move by Carly Lloyd? She cuts it back. Kelly O'Hara steps in front of Kemba, and it's in the back of the net, and the USA scored 2 goals.
What is up, beautiful people? Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. On this July 1st, happy July. Happy July. Almost July 4th, with this being the week of the holiday. This Saturday will be July 4th. Hope you're having a great week, though. We have a lot to talk about, as you just heard. The United States. How about that? The U.S. Women's National Team getting a 2-0 victory over statistically the best team in the world, in Germany. Thrilling, thrilling stuff. We're going to dive into that in just a sec. Again, our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. How you doing, Isaac?
Ow, I'm doing great. That Anthony Davis contract last night, you know, I was about to go to sleep and saw it pop up on my phone. 1 minute into free agency, you know, you talk about loyalty, cash, a lot of cash, but he deserves it. Anthony Davis will be the best player in this league in 2 to 3 years. I don't think that's too outlandish of a statement.
Right.
And he could really attract some other free agents that otherwise would not come to New Orleans since it's a small market team. So worth every penny, and I'm so happy he signed it. Because future looks bright. You see me sporting my Pelicans hat and the old school Jazz jersey.
You are certainly wearing it very proudly right now, Isaac. And yeah, that's an immense contract that's going to make Anthony Davis the richest man in the NBA. And I think it's certainly well-deserving. Anytime you have a player like Anthony Davis, who I think will be the best player in the NBA, in about maybe 3 to 4 years, once LeBron James' skills begin to deteriorate and he becomes an older player in the league, because the kid can do it all. Anytime New Orleans, you know, anytime you're in a position of New Orleans Pelicans to have such a franchise player like him, and really the face of sports in that area, hey, you got to keep him. You got to do what it takes to keep him. And I think that is certainly a way to do that, offering the man a 5-year contract extension worth $145 million. That's a lot of moolah that no one would turn down. I don't care if I'm playing in Alaska. If you offer me that money, I will be your guy in Alaska, okay? But yeah, pretty exciting stuff, though. Exciting stuff for you, man. And, you know, I'm particularly excited because, you know, I'm a big Rocky fan. I love the Rocky movies, one of my favorite movie franchises. And I happened to just be browsing on Facebook the other day. Well, actually, last night. And I saw the preview or trailer for the upcoming Rocky movie, which is actually a Rocky spinoff, which kind of profiles Apollo Creed's son. How about that? And get this, Michael B. Jordan, who I think is a fantastic young actor. You know who Michael B. Jordan is, Isaac? He's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, I love him.
Yeah, he played in Fruitvale Station, which is a very emotional movie. He's actually in the upcoming Fantastic Four movie as well. But Michael B. Jordan will be playing Apollo Creed's son in this upcoming movie. And I tell you what, this kid got ripped, like straight up just ripped. The trailer is on my Facebook page for those who are friends of mine on Facebook. But the trailer is up there, and man, did he get in shape for this movie. And of course, Sly is in the movie, and he's going to actually train Apollo Creed's son in the movie. Fantastic storyline, because I for a minute there, I'm sitting there like, okay, how many more Rocky movies can you make? I think the storyline has really hit its peak. But there's to have a spinoff and really take the angle of Apollo Creed and have his son come into play, that was very clever from Sly Stallone. I really like it. I think it's going to be a fantastic movie. But now, as let's transition. I want to talk about what happened last night. The U.S., besides me looking at movie trailers, right? The U.S. of A. women's national soccer team came up huge, just tremendous, against Germany, completely shutting down the hottest team in all of women's soccer. You know, what I found particularly interesting, because if you look at Germany throughout this World Cup, Isaac, Germany has scored 20 goals in 5 games. That's a lot of scoring. I mean, they scoring is what they do. Scoring is what they do. And the fact that the U.S. of A. was able to completely shut this team down and hold Germany to not score one goal throughout that entire game was truly fascinating to me. I mean, that was fascinating. Now, I will say this. I do think that the referees throughout that game did help the USA, especially in that second half. Because if you look at it, you know, and really, though, Germany, there's a counterpart to that argument as well. Because Germany had a golden opportunity to really salvage all momentum when they had that penalty kick. Cecilia Sachs, if you remember, she missed that penalty shot in the 59th minute. U.S. center back Julie Johnston pulled the back of Sachs. She goes there and just totally whiffs on the kick. And I saw a stat that came up at the top left of that screen that said that prior to that penalty kick, Germany was 32 of 32. Are you kidding me? And then they go in there and Sachs misses. Everybody thought that Sachs was going to make that goal, including myself. And when she missed it, that opened the door for the U.S. to really steam back in that game, and that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, it was. And the U.S., you know, you talk about their outstanding defense in that game. It's nothing new. This team has only allowed one goal in 6 World Cup matches this World Cup. Like Landon Donovan said, he tweeted this out last night, I'd love to see a stat on that. There's no way that many teams have done that, because one goal in 6 games against World Cup opposition, that's really unparalleled. I've never seen that, being a soccer fan for quite a decent amount of time.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Really outstanding by the U.S. women's team. And how about the coaching as well? Kelly O'Hare comes on, scores a goal. I can't say enough about Carly Lloyd.
Right.
Know?
She's been fantastic. I think she's arguably been the best player throughout the World Cup for the U.S. team. I mean, she has been absolutely fantastic. And again, looking at that second penalty that allowed U.S. to get on the board, to take that 1-0 lead in that game. If you really look at that play, and something that really stood out to me when looking at that game, Isaac, was when that penalty happened, the penalty actually occurred outside of the box. The refs totally whiffed on that, though. I mean, Alex Morgan, she was taken to the ground just outside of the penalty box, and the refs awarded the penalty kick in which Carly Lloyd gave the U.S. of A. that 1-0 lead, to change the momentum of that game. But, again, it was right outside the box. I mean, that shouldn't have been a PK, am I right?
In fairness to the referee, and you're right, no, it shouldn't have.
Right.
By soccer rules, where the foul occurs based on where player-to-player contact occurs is where the foul is.
Exactly.
So it shouldn't have been a penalty by the letter of the law. However, when the ball's rolling like that and it's so far ahead of the play, it really is difficult for the referee and puts them in an awkward position because then you have to question, well, if the foul had, they're still disrupting play in the penalty box, although the foul occurred outside since the player was going to run into the penalty box.
Mm-hmm.
So although I don't think it was the right decision, it wasn't egregious either. And I think since it was a two-goal game and Germany really missed their chance.
Right.
So you can't fault the referee for losing them that match. The U.S. won by two goals, O'Hara's goal in the 85th minute. Again, off a Carly Lloyd cross.
Yeah, it was great. Great play by Carly Lloyd. I mean, it was great footwork for her to get that close, and then she found Kelly O'Hara in the cross just to really nail it in the back of the net. I mean, that was a fantastic play. That was a legit play.
Exactly. So the U.S. deserved to win that game, and I'm looking forward to the final against Japan because it will be against Japan. Putting that out there.
Right, and that's my next point I want to make. I mean, when you look at Japan, a team who actually, if you remember, if you were to rewind the clock for a little bit here, Isaac, Japan actually beat the U.S. in 2011 in the World Cup. So, kind of an opportunity here for the U.S. to get some revenge from what happened back then, 4 years ago. But Japan right now is ranked fourth in the world. England is ranked sixth in the world. And I think all signs point to Japan pulling out this win against England today and them meeting in the championship game on Sunday. What do you think is going to happen in that game?
Well, not only did Japan beat the U.S. first off, it was in the final, like you said, 2011.
Right.
In PKs, I remember Hope Solo, you know, who was the face of American soccer along with Abby Wambach at the time. Hope Solo was just distraught. I remember that. So I think Japan just, they've got an offensive style, and I think they really take it to England. I think England's an overrated side, actually. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're even sixth. So I think Japan wins by two goals max, but I think it's an easy two-goal game.
Well, I'll certainly be tuning in. And speaking of Hope Solo, I mean, she's been really fantastic throughout this World Cup as well. I mean, another shutout for her last night. She seems so focused, so poised. Amidst all of the off-the-field talk about, you know, the domestic abuse issues and so on and so forth and the issues with her husband and whatnot, that has been really, you know, the big talk because a lot of people were trying to figure out whether or not that storyline would be a distraction and would come in the way of the U.S.'s run in this World Cup. But, I mean, she just went out there and just played soccer. And that's what the rest of the team has done as well. And they've done a great job, you know, taking the cliche PR move when they are addressed with questions or were addressed with those questions before the U.S. even took the field, hey, they deflected them. They said, hey, we're not focused on that. Hope Solo, she's a great teammate. We're going to go out there and just play soccer. That's exactly the mindset they've had, and it's what's led them to the World Cup final. And really, it's you know, I haven't even really heard any big talk of Hope Solo and her problems off the field in this recent run, to be honest with you, Isaac.
Like you said, play silences the off-the-field questions. It happened with Kobe. It's happening with Solo because although it doesn't change what happened or what didn't happen, mm-hmm. we really don't know. We have no reason to assume anything. But at the same time, on-the-field play is what people remember. And Solo is making everybody remember the on-the-field play. None of the off-the-field issues.
Yeah, certainly. Again, folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And, you know, I want to address this really briefly here before we get into this Jim Harbaugh discussion here, Isaac. But you know what I found interesting was because, you know, when I was sitting on my couch watching that game last night and you know, kind of putting in perspective that this is the World Cup. This is one of the famed event, in my opinion, when it comes to international soccer, because everyone tunes in. It doesn't matter where you are. But when you compare this run for the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team to the final, and if you compare it to the men's U.S. National Soccer Team last summer, because I had to rewind the clock a little bit and I had to really Google it to make sure that this occurred last year when the U.S. was making their run in the World Cup. They didn't even sniff the final. Let's be honest here. Of course, I think Germany and Argentina. Is that right? I think it was Germany and Argentina in 2000. Yeah, they played in that summer finale. But, you know, I remember when the U.S. is making that run and turning on my television and, you know, the national news talking about it and having endless broadcast on it and all these different analysts talking about it, which to that extent, you know, that attention is garnered a bit with this team as well, with the women's team. But I remember, man, when people were packing the bars here in East Lansing and going just to watch, you know, a semifinal or a quarterfinal game with the U.S. men's national soccer team. But I will say that the hoopla surrounded around the U.S. women's national team is nowhere near the hoopla that we saw last summer with the U.S. men's national team and their run in the World Cup. I feel like it's immensely greater, and I think that may have to just to do with the gender barrier when you compare men's soccer compared to women's soccer.
There definitely is a gender barrier, and that's definitely the reason. It's unfortunate because soccer is one of those sports where you really look at it, there's not much difference in the way they play, the men and the women. There's a lot more headed goals in the women's game, but the build-up play, the skills, a lot of those are the same. You look at Marta, the Brazilian legend when it comes to women's soccer. She was exhilarating to watch, absolutely phenomenal. Alex Morgan had several plays yesterday where she totally deked the defender and went around. That's all things you see in the men's game as well. So I think it's unfortunate, but this is something where people look at Women's World Cup and they're like, oh, women's, who cares? It's not because of the play, because the U.S. women's team is fantastic. They play a very high quality of soccer, and anybody would be happy to go to that game, be involved with it, because it's so exciting. It's
right.
Just the word women's that – there is a gender barrier in sports, and it's super unfortunate.
You know, I always use the saying that success breeds attention, but unfortunately, when comparing men's and women's sports, that saying just kind of goes out the window, unfortunately, because, I mean, we're talking about the number two, arguably number one team in the entire world compared to the men's national soccer team, which was ranked in like the 20s or 30s at the time. So unfortunate stuff. Let's transition now. I want to talk about Jim Harbaugh. You know, the Harbaugh hoopla is on 10 right now out in Ann Arbor. And, you know, we talked about a story, Isaac, not too long ago concerning Andre Pipkins, who last week came out and said that Jim Harbaugh had had forced him to take a medical, you know, red shirt and to open up a scholarship for the U of M football team when he really didn't want to. And, you know, this is the first time that we've seen Jim Harbaugh address this quote-unquote issue or quarrel that Pipkins has voiced to ESPN.com. For those who don't know, Michigan football coach Jim Harbaugh vehemently defended himself Tuesday night when he threw out the first pitch right before the Detroit Tigers and Pittsburgh Pirates baseball game, against accusations that his policy is pressuring players to retire due to medical issues. Now, the charge came from defensive tackle Andre Pipkins last week on ESPN.com, who said that Harbaugh and the staff at U of M repeatedly wanted him to sign a form ending his career due to injuries. Harbaugh said, before throwing out that first pitch at Comerica, quote, "We don't run off players." So, Isaac, Jim Harbaugh is denying these accusations from Andre Pipkins, who say that Jim Harbaugh, along with those of his coaching staff, said, hey, you might as well take a medical red shirt for us right now because we don't believe that, you know, you're going to play next season. And he's saying that we don't run off our players. Now, you know, there's also another interesting quote that I'm going to bring up here in just a sec. In which Jim Harbaugh talks about, you know, if he doesn't feel like if a player is going to contribute, then, you know, just a comment addressing those who have medical issues on his team. But what is your reaction to Jim Harbaugh denying this accusation from Pipkins?
Well, it's not really surprising, is it?
Not at all. Not at all. Right.
You're like, oh, yeah, we just don't want him on the team because he's got injury problems. And, you know, that's not what he's going to say, obviously. The school, though, came out last week and said, after consulting with our medical team, we do not think that it's in Andre's best interest as it relates to his health and welfare to play football short or long term. Mm-hmm. He remains on full scholarship, though, and is counted to the 85 scholarships that the U of M football team has.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, there's no way they can cut him now, obviously, after you know, he came out and made this big hoopla about it. But I side with Harbaugh here. If the doctors say that Hipkins isn't fit to play, I'm sorry, but I have to trust the doctors more than I trust an individual player with that type of information. These are people with PhDs in the subject who know what they're doing. They've got doctorates. So, no, I'm sorry. If the doctors say that he's not healthy enough to play, I don't think he's healthy enough to play.
I have to totally agree with you. I mean, I definitely side with Jim Harbaugh in this situation. Because if you look at it, and, you know, and this, Pipkins in the article talks about his medical history with the U of M football program. You're talking about an ACL tear, neck injury, multiple concussions. And, you know, the quote that I wanted to get to and read, you know, Jim Harbaugh says, quote, when it comes to the health and safety of the players, that argument trumps all other arguments. It's hard to argue with him in that statement because, yeah, I mean, if Andre Pipkins has not been healthy for you, he's had multiple concussions, he had an ACL tear, he's had, you know, a neck injury, I think it's best you take this medical red shirt because you don't want to risk any more injury. I understand it's your senior year, you want to go out there and play for your teammates, but at the same time, are you really fit to be on the gridiron? Now, there is another side, an emotional side to this argument as well that I want to get to, Isaac, because there are many people out there that say, okay, but he wants to be there for his teammates. He wants to be an emotional presence on the sidelines. Jim Harbaugh possibly coming out and saying, okay, you can still keep your scholarship, just be on the sidelines and be a part of the program in an emotional conversation, then yeah. Okay, that would have made him seem like a pretty classy guy if he was to do that. But at the end of the day, college football is a business at the same time, Isaac. That could free up a scholarship for somebody else. You know, even though that somebody else may not come in and be an immediate impact type of a player, but at the same time, you do got a scholarship just sitting there when the kid's not even playing.
No, you're exactly right. Jim Harbaugh's job is to win football games for this team. So if he can free up a scholarship that he thinks can help him do that, and they're not faking any injuries for this kid. Like you said, neck injuries, torn ACL. This kid's got his own long grocery list of things that need to be addressed when it comes to his health. So Jim Harbaugh, no, he's not doing anything wrong in my opinion. And the other thing, though, that I just have to address is you got to feel bad for this guy, Andre Pipkins, though, because he was a 5-star recruit and he's played in 24 career games.
Yeah, I mean, just an injury-laden career at U of M. And, you know, I think Jim Harbaugh is you know, he's always had this mindset. He's not in this business to make friends. He's in this business to win, and he's going to do what it takes and take the necessary steps to get Michigan back on its saddle because we all know how bad this team has been in the past 3 to 4 seasons, even more right now. You know what I mean? So looking at it, you know, hey, if this frees up a scholarship for a player who can play and possibly make an immediate impact, Jim Harbaugh is going to try and make that move. Phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Again, we are taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will invite today's guest on WKAR's Current Sports. His name is Zach Berich, sports reporter and anchor at WILX TV 10. You do not want to miss that chat. Don't touch that dial. Again, you are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, always have been. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I also have to address this because I've been getting a few emails, a few text messages, and even a few calls concerning Current Sports TV this week. We are actually preempted, ladies and gents, and we have a few of our producers on vacation. Shout out to Ken Merley and Tim Elkins. So we will be re-airing my chat with George Blaha, the famed voice for the Detroit Pistons, as well as the Michigan State football team. So if you happen to miss that, you can catch it this Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Let's get to our phone lines. On line one, I believe we have Martin from Orchard Lake. Martin, how you doing, brother?
Oh, man. I don't care what Harbaugh is doing as long as he gets me some wins, man.
There you go. Right, look, exactly. It's a business, baby.
Look, did he break a rule? Did he break a rule?
Right.
Exactly. Another thing is, this is what Michigan fans don't get. It's the same thing that Nick Saban does. It's the same thing that Urban Meyer does. And if you want to be what Michigan fans want, like, I'm a Michigan alum. If you want to be what we want, like, we want to be in that college football playoff. We want to be competing for a national championship. And if this is the thing that people who are doing that does, let's do it. I'm all for it.
Right. I agree. And, you know, when I first heard the story, first off, I wanted to temper my emotions initially because, you know, when the story first broke, I mean, it kind of painted out, you know, Jim Harbaugh to be the big bad bully. You know what I mean? We're going to force you to take this medical red shirt because we don't want you on the team. We can free up another scholarship for another player. But at the same time, you know, hearing the other side of this, you know, Jim Harbaugh, you know, he finally made a comment on it before throwing out the first pitch at yesterday's Tigers game and him saying that, you know, that's not what we do here. This is a business. You know, Andre has had a list of injuries throughout his entire career, so it's in his best interest to take a medical redshirt and to free up a position for another player to possibly play, who can make an immediate impact on his team, possibly. The key word is possibly in that argument. So at the end of the day, I understand fully, 100%, where Jim Harbaugh is coming from.
But I mean, on the same token, like, as a Michigan fan, like, I have to take off my maize colored glasses to see, like, if this was, like, Devin Gardner last year, he'd be playing. You know what I mean? Like, the part of the reason is that Andre Pipkins is going to sit on the bench for most of this year. Harbaugh didn't see him in the plan, at least from my opinion. So it's like, but with me, like, as a Michigan fan, I understand that Michigan fans, like, kind of have this whole attitude of, like, we're better than that. We don't need to do that. Like, we don't need to win that way. But, like, my freshman year was Rich Rod 3-9. Like, I'm ready to win. If this is what it takes to win, I'm all for it, Al.
And that's the expectation that is surrounded around the most storied program in college football history with, you know, donning that maize and blue. I got to ask this question, Martin, because we've been debating this on the show since Jim Harbaugh got hired because the hoopla has been off the charts. I mean, you probably saw the HBO Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel montage that they had. He's also been on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I mean, everywhere you turn, everyone's talking about Jim Harbaugh. And I feel like we've had a few callers that have echoed this sentiment. I feel like a lot of Michigan fans are banking on Michigan to come back and return to form in Jim Harbaugh's first year. Is that a realistic expectation for a Michigan fan like yourself?
See, it's kind of like, I kind of see both sides. Because last year's team with Brady Hoke could have been so, like, they went 7-5 by the grace of God. But if they had an actual coach, I feel like that team could have won maybe 8-9 games and been way more competitive. Now on the same token, you got State. Michigan State is obviously one of the top 10 teams in the nation. Ohio State, top 5 teams in the nation. So it's like, I think they'll probably still finish 7-5, 8-8, but it's going to look a whole lot better. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
They're going to compete in those games against State and compete against Ohio State, whereas before, you know, Michigan played Michigan State. You know, by halftime, it was like, yo, what do we tell these kids? They're going out and getting killed. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think year one, the record may not be vastly different, but I expect the play on the field and the competitiveness and the team on the field to look vastly different. And so I guess when I define success for Michigan and Harbaugh's first year, it's much more about how the team looks than about the actual record.
It extends beyond the
record.
But by
year two,
right.
Year three, we're winning double-digit games. Well, we got some problems.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. That is very, very true. Hey, Martin, always a great call, my man. Thanks a lot, brother.
All right, man. Keep it up.
Hey, thanks a lot, dude. Yeah, I have to agree with Martin on next. I think that, you know, if the team looks good and they're competing week in and week out, I just think it's unrealistic for Jim Harbaugh to come in and just wave the magic stick and boom. You know, we're talking about Cotton Bowls and Rose Bowl wins for this team or competing for a college football playoff. That's unrealistic when looking at the history that this team has had on the gridiron for the past three seasons, Isaac. He's not a miracle worker.
Yeah, the record might not even look that good. Looking at the talent that he has, there is nobody worthwhile right now at Michigan football. So Jim Harbaugh, like you said, not a miracle worker, but he's going to turn things in a positive direction.
517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. Without further ado, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. He has just walked through our doors here at Current Sports and is sitting down right across from me. His name is Zach Barrich. He is the new sports reporter and anchor at WILX-TV10. Zach, my man, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Al. Thanks for having me. I want to say first, happy Canada Day. I know you've got some Canadian listeners. We're not too far away. And happy Bobby Bonilla Day,
yes, especially
to Bobby Bonilla, who's, I guess only to Bobby Bonilla and the New York Mets fans. And happy free agents. This is a day, I'm sure, another Christmas for you, isn't it, free agency?
Without a doubt. I love it because now you get to see, you know, the moving and shaking all in the NBA. I mean, you get to see where certain pieces, who's talking to who. And I'm just hoping, I'm a big Piston guy. So I'm just hoping my Pistons make a big move that really puts them back on the map of some form of relevancy, which I think Stanley Johnson is going to be a solid player for this team down the line. I would have liked Justice Winslow, I'm just saying. But the Pistons, I will say this. I think they do make the playoffs next year. I will say that. So, yeah, but Zach, and you know, a lot of people don't know, we go back like four flats on the Cadillac, brother. We actually went to school with each other. We were both sports broadcasting majors. We worked at home TV with each other. And then we both got into the industry, you know, kind of like the same period. I went to Channel 6 News here in the area while you went to Colorado. First off, how was that?
Colorado was something. It's, I was in a Grand Junction. It's not the, when you think of Colorado, it's not the area that you think of. Grand Junction is about 20 miles from Utah.
Okay.
And so it's high desert. It's not the snowy cap mountains and the Denver thing that you think of, but it certainly got its own luster, I suppose, too. Lots of great hiking. Good sports out there, honestly.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know. How was the sporting scene out there? What'd you get the chance to cover?
Well, the big thing that Grand Junction has is the JUCO World Series, Junior College World Series of Baseball. And that's a big deal, actually, because, as you know, a lot of the players that come that get drafted by MLB clubs come from, you know, high schools and junior colleges, maybe even more so some years than four-year schools like your Stanfords and your LSUs and that sort of thing.
Right.
So you get to see, you know, Bryce Harper played there 3 years ago, the year before I got there. And a number of guys that played this year were drafted just a couple weeks back in that MLB draft.
Right.
So you get to see a lot of these names before they're really the names, you know.
Right, really big names in the league, possibly, yeah.
Right, and then so that's the big thing. That was about about a month ago. We head over to Aspen, actually. We cover the Winter X Games.
Wow, you guys get to cover the X Games. That's something I've always wanted to cover. But, again, with that, you know, being here in Michigan, you don't get to have that avenue to get to cover it. I mean, how was that?
It's wild. It's a completely different kind of sport and sports fan, obviously.
Right.
Boy, ESPN does such a good job with it, and it gets bigger and bigger each year. Local stations, like I was at, a little bit limited in what we can cover and who we can talk to and that sort of thing. But just being there, it's bigger than TV makes it. It's really a sight.
So let's say, you know, with the, you know, the Winter X Games going on, I mean, is that a story that would lead your sportscast on a nightly basis then? Is that what we're talking?
From Aspen?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, myself and whoever the other sports reporter is, we would head there. We do our, 8-10 minutes live from there the entire time. Because it's about 2 hours away, so we don't have time to, you know, go back
right.
and forth. A lot of their stuff happens in the evening. So we try to, you know, sniff out some stories. We had a couple local guys that went. One guy who was in the snowmobile and the name event escapes me. But a couple local guys we try to cover, and then we get our footage and we go live from there. And
wow.
Boy, it's a rush. It's a lot of fun. It's really cold, obviously. You know, 10:30 at night, up at, you know, 9,000 feet in the air, whatever it is.
I can only imagine. That's very cool stuff. Now, Zach, how in the world did you make yourself, make your way back here to Mid-Michigan? How did that come about?
You know, it was something that I had fortunately kind of set up in advance. As you mentioned, I worked at Channel 10, not doing – you got right into the reporting. I grabbed a camera and was a photographer there and,
exactly.
and shot the news. I know we'd run into each other a number of times out in the field. Just doing my work there, and they kept me on their mind. Thankfully, I'm grateful to have people think of me in that sort of way, you know. And I got a call up from management, and they said, "Hey, we got to get you out here now." And about a week later, I packed my car full of everything I own, and I drove 24 and a half hours back to Michigan.
And you just told me before we hit the hit the air just now during that first break that you did it in one take, just no breaks at all, just in 24 hours, you said?
Just coffee and gas breaks.
Oh, my goodness. Alone, all alone.
I will admit, though, I made it totally fine to Chicago, and I got about an hour, just to the border of Indiana, Michigan. And I couldn't do it. So I pulled off to a rest stop and I slept for about 25 minutes, just my face up against the glass at a rest stop. And I don't know if anyone was looking at me or pointing. I didn't care at that point. But no, right. It was, I guess, 23 hours was my wall and I needed a quick a little breather there.
Wow, that's unbelievable stuff. I can let alone, you know, even sometimes driving from Lansing to Detroit, where I'm from, to visit the family. Sometimes if I hadn't got enough sleep, I'm done after like 30 minutes in the drive and I have to just go stop and get me some coffee. But 24 hours straight. That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable stuff. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKR's Current Sports, we are speaking with Zach Barrett, sports reporter and anchor at WILX TV 10. First off, Zach, what are you looking forward to covering the most right here in the area?
Well, you know, I went out and was at this pro-am last night over at Aim High with MSU players.
Yeah, the money ball.
Yeah, money ball. Boy, that was another spectacle. And I walked into that not knowing what to expect, but people showed up. It was a great atmosphere. You know, Coach Ferguson does a great job putting that on, and everyone came out. And I'm looking at these guys, and I'm recognizing a lot of these names who don't go to MSU, but a lot of the guys that – when I did work here a few years back, we're playing
in high school.
In high school, yeah, one particular, Frederick Edmond, went to Eastern. He was playing and he was throwing down 360 dunks and stuff like this, and it just, you know, it reminded me how much I love covering the high school. You know, you think about coming back here, and of course you got Mark D'Antoni in the football and Tom Izzo in basketball, and those are huge national. I can't wait to get back to that, but going out to Colorado and kind of. Starting there, so to speak, it really put my roots down in the high school. How awesome high school sports can be, honestly.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure you covered a lot of high school sports out in Colorado. Comparing the high school, because you and I both know how crazy the high school sports scene here is in Michigan. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. And I'm from Detroit. I mean, you would think, you know, high school sports are big in Detroit, but as far as the media coverage. In Metro Detroit, you know, they don't really place a big emphasis on covering high school sports. So when I came here as a, you know, an intern and then eventually a reporter here in the area, I mean, it was amazing for me to go out to different games like at Okemos and in Lansing Eastern and Everett and to see how the community will rally around these teams. And you really get to know, you know, the coaches and the players so well. Unbelievable kids. I mean, the area here in Mid-Michigan when it comes to the high school sports scene is unbelievable. So I'm curious to know, when you compare, and you've experienced it, when you compare the high school sports scene of Michigan to that of Colorado. I mean, what are the similarities and what are the differences?
They are very, very different just in terms of, you know, when I got out there, it was summertime. We got into football. That's a big deal anywhere you're going to go, honestly.
Exactly.
High school football is going to be big. But when we got into winter, it's nothing like Lansing because everything revolves around basketball here. Wrestling is what we, you know, the people would rather see. And I can't tell you how many wrestling matches I covered. And
really?
Yeah, a little bit hesitant going into it, just something I hadn't done previous. But once I got into it, I learned to love wrestling. And the same thing for baseball. Baseball, wrestling are the top two things out there. And we're just talking about Western Colorado because it's completely different than, like I said, the Front Range of Denver and Colorado Springs in that area. But
so you're telling me baseball and wrestling top football? In basketball?
I would say so.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, my. So what was that like covering that? I mean, I'm pretty sure you learned a lot about wrestling. I mean, I understand the gist of it, but as far as the scoring and whatnot, I mean, I'm totally stupid when it comes to that aspect to it.
Well, I'm right there with you, too. You got to kind of just, you know, make it sound like you know what you're talking about and you know, talk to people and ask them. You know, everybody out there knows it. And that kind of blew my mind, too,
right.
Is how popular it was. And so that was another thing that I did. You asked me about some of the things I did, make the 4-hour trip through the mountains to cover the 4-day state wrestling meet in Denver.
Yeah.
Because we had so many athletes from, and honestly, the station that I was at only covered 12 to 14 schools.
Right. Exactly.
And they're all really spread out, but you know, half of everyone's team goes to Denver because they're so good. To wrestle for a state championship.
Unbelievable stuff. Again, folks, we are talking with Zach Barrett, sports reporter and anchor at WILX TV 10. Zach, You got a chance to anchor last week. I actually saw you over the weekend when I was doing some work at home. And I'm like, oh, there's my man, Zach. He's finally in the area. And I'm curious, I mean, how is it at Channel 10 so far? I mean, working with Tim Stout, a longtime presence, sports presence here in the area. And, hey, beautiful studio, too. New studio with touch screens and everything. How is that, man?
Have you been in there?
I have not. I've just seen it. When they first unveiled it, the very first night, I watched. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. That's sexy. Pretty sexy studio, I must say. Oh.
Well, I agree. Before I left, there were tarps everywhere. You know, you could see the drywall. They were in the middle of remodeling, and so it was, you know, bad carpet that had been there for I don't know how many years, and right. Holes in walls and stuff like that. So this was a big project in the making. I got back, I didn't know what to expect, and boy, it is gorgeous in there. It's, you know, glass tabletops. The newsroom is set up in a much more convenient way that you know.
Previous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, just more functions, more features. It really seems like everything's going really well right there. And again, I've only been there for a week, but I know that Channel 10 is certainly functioning well and doing a good job.
Yeah. Have you used the touchscreen yet? I'm curious.
The touchscreen.
That thing is sexy.
You know, I'm terrified of that because, you watch on TV, you watch these professionals on the big, you know, ESPN and whatnot,
yes.
and they're poking at it. They can't get them to go sometime. Like, I don't want that to be me. They're trying to move an X over here or trying to drag a name into a draft or something, and they can't do it. And I'm like, you know what?
It's bad. And I see it on CNN all the time because they have, you know, the updated technology. And sometimes it's like, oh, man.
Sometimes it's great and it works.
Yeah, sometimes. But you know, when it doesn't work, I mean, you look like an idiot up there, don't you?
I'll take the leap eventually. I'll let you know.
There you go. Let me know. I'll keep you posted, man. Well, keep me posted, I should say. I'll be watching as well. How's it working with Tim? How's he doing?
Tim's great. You know, he's very, you know, accommodating. You know, nobody knows more. I don't know how many years, 40-something years he's been doing it for.
They call him the Dean of Sports, man.
Yeah. And it's certainly a fitting name. And, you know, already in just a week, you'll learn so much from a guy like that.
Yeah, certainly.
And unfortunately, I didn't get to spend a lot of time in my previous stint there around him because, as you know, I did a lot of the overnight stuff. So I didn't get to see him too much. But, you know, while I'm here, he's a guy you just got to soak things up around while you're around him while you can.
That's certainly true. All right, Zach, before we get you out of here, man, I want to get some quick thoughts on what you've seen from the sporting scene right here in Michigan so far. What's your thoughts on the Tigers really briefly here? Because right now, I believe they're, Isaac, six games? Is that right? Six games in back of the Royals? I can't check it right now, but I believe there's six games in back of the Royals right now. They had an unbelievable weekend, which I'm sure you reported on. James McCann, walk-off winner. They're finally starting to get healthy. They have Bruce Rondon back. You saw Justin Verlander on the mound yesterday. They have Victor Martinez as well. I think, you know, that moment that occurred over the weekend could be a moment where you look back and say that's the moment where the Tigers got it rolling. It's still too early to say that right now because we've seen how this season has gone thus far, really kind of a roller coaster type of a year. Do you think the Tigers can pull this thing, you know, and put this thing back on the tracks and win the AL Central Division that's so competitive with the Royals?
Well, that walk-off did even as we're watching it, and it did seem like a moment that can make a big turn. You know, all the names that you just listed off. You didn't even say J.D. Martinez.
Yeah, J.D.
What is 11 home runs in June? Just he's mashing. He's raking everything. And that's great. And then you get to a guy like Miguel Cabrera who just keeps doing his thing. And they've got so many weapons. But, yeah, like you said, having a healthy Victor Martinez. And who knows what's going to happen with Justin Verlander. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I feel like this is fairly common for them as far as they go through a little bit of a June gloom, if you will. Or they take a dip somewhere before the All-Star break,
right.
They're always right around 500, I feel like, right around the All-Star break. And then, you know, they're always in one way or another. I don't know about catching the Royals because they're awfully good.
Yeah.
But again, real early to say a six-game lead. It's certainly not insurmountable with, you know, 90, however many games left they have. But, you know, once Victor gets back into his slot and JV, like I said, who knows? He goes back to the guy we know. Absolutely, they can take the division, you know. But right now, the way that they played, aside from this last week, they look like a wild card team, in my opinion.
I said the same thing, and we had Alex Sharg, our former current sports PA, on, and he also talked about a wild card spot as well. I think right now that's the pace they're headed on because I just think they've been so inconsistent this season. I mean, maybe they do get it together. I mean, it's still early. A baseball season is a marathon; it's certainly not a sprint. So we'll talk in August and see where they are then, right? All right, folks. Well, this is our second break. When we come back, we will have Barbershop Wednesday for you. Can Brett Favre still play? I can't believe we're still talking about this, but we'll debate briefly about that. Also, we'll chat again about Anthony Davis to become the richest man in the NBA. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Never lost my way. Never see the hype and get confused. Never lost my way. Never turn fool when I reach out the crossroad. Never lost my way. Never see the hype and get confused. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We just finished up a chat with Zach Barrett, sports reporter and anchor at WILX TV 10. He's actually going to join us to wrap up the show with only, 8 minutes left in the show. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We do have a brief Barbershop Wednesday to bring you all. Oh, yeah, we're still talking about Brett Favre possibly playing in the NFL. Well, I guess you could say I'll preface that this conversation with, you know, he just made a comment in the latest edition of Sports Illustrated talking about whether or not he thinks he could still play. And he says, quote, "I think I could play." He said that during that recent interview with SI. He says, quote, "As far as throwing, of course, we're not trying to start some he's coming out of retirement deal. Do I think I could play and lead a team? Look, no, but I could play. I can make all the throws I made before. I just couldn't throw it nearly as far, but that never matters anyway." Here we go, folks. Can Brett Favre still play in the NFL? It's time for Barbershop Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, we can't talk straight in the barbershop. Then where can we talk straight? We can't talk straight nowhere else. You know, this ain't nothing but a healthy conversation.
That's right. You heard Cedric. Nothing but healthy conversation. You guys know, at least where I'm from in Detroit, man, whenever I go in to get a fresh fly cut, everyone thinks they're the next Stephen A. Smith or Skip Bayless. There's always a sports debate going on. And this has been a debate, fellas, that has been had for a long, long time. Looking at the bottom barrel of quarterbacks in the NFL, there are still many out there that believe that a guy like Brett Favre could come in and make an immediate impact with the team. Now, you heard what he just said in the SI article. "I think I could play. Do I think I could lead a team? Look, no." So he's being honest in his interview. Then he goes on to say, "But I could play. I could make all the throws I made before. I just couldn't throw it as nearly as far as I could. But that never matters anyway." Do you guys think that Brett Favre could still play if he was in the NFL today?
Would you rather have him or Dan Orlovsky backing up?
Exactly, right? I think I'll choose Brett Favre, right?
Yeah, or a lot of those backups. Like you said, like a you know, Jeff Toole or somebody that gets in the game and they throw 2 for 9. Yeah, I think Brett Favre could do a better job. And I don't want to, you know, I know obviously he's not listening, but I don't want to feed an ego. But isn't this just a response of what – didn't Michael Jordan come out and say something like this not too long ago, saying, "I could still play too"? Is it just an ego matching an ego right now?
I think it is because, yeah, I mean, MJ still thinks he could not only just play, but also, you know, beat multiple players one-on-one, you know, in a pickup game. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, when you look at it, I think – the sports fan in us, because, you know, I'm a big MJ guy. I was a big Brett Favre guy when he played as well. These guys have such a big aura surrounded around them throughout their story playing career that there is a part of you as a fan that thinks, man, what if he came back? You know what I mean? I think, you know, and like you said, you brought up Dan Orlovsky. You think that he could come in and make an immediate impact, or I would say, you know, be able to hold down the fort for a few plays here and there. You know what I mean? So at the end of the day, I do think Brett Favre could come in and possibly a solid backup. But come on, starting and leading a team? I mean, he just admitted it. No, Brett Favre's not doing that.
Well, exactly. And when he's playing, that's what I was worried about when I first saw that headline. Brett Favre thinks he can still play in the NFL. I'm like, no. He's 45. He cannot lead a team. He can't do any of that. But he admitted that as far as being a backup quarterback, not to say it doesn't take a lot, but there are a lot of backup quarterbacks who I look at and say, you know, I'm not sure why they're in the league. While right. Brett Favre, yes, he could definitely play backup quarterback for one team. might be a third-string quarterback, might be a second-string, but he could play a backup quarterback role fine.
And, hey, if Tim Tebow can get a shot, why not Brett Favre, right? Come on now. Tim Tebow, I think, who's Tim Tebow trying out for right now? Yeah, the Philadelphia Eagles, along with, I think, Mark Sanchez is also over there right now. I mean, come on.
Sam Bradford, too. Yeah.
And Sam Bradford.
Half the quarterbacks in the NFL right now.
Exactly. Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Oh, my goodness. So, I think we're all on agreeance on this Barbershop Wednesday. Hey, yeah. Could he be a backup? Yeah, but starting QB, no.
I think he could hold 4 extra points at the very least.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Better than Tony Romo.
That's what I'm saying.
Hey, don't come at my Cowboys. Hold on now. Hold on, fellas. Hold on. All right, to wrap up today's discussion, I want to briefly talk about what we actually started the show with, your New Orleans Pelicans. Isaac, again, for those that don't know, with Isaac being born and bred in the great city that is New Orleans, he is the biggest Pelicans fan you will ever meet. He's actually donning his hat right now. And if you haven't heard, looks like he's going to get a pretty hefty extension. 5 years, $145 million, making him the richest player in the league. Is he worth the moolah? What do you think, Zach?
I think so. And listen to what you guys were saying earlier. He has developed so – I didn't know he had that kind of an outside game before watching him this and last year, you know. And obviously he's still developed – was he 21 maybe?
I'm not even sure.
He's 22.
22 years old.
He'll be 22 at the start of the season. At the moment, he's still 21.
Right, right. Is he worth the money, Isaac?
Oh, yeah.
I know what you're going to say. I don't even know why I asked you. Yeah.
That is a steal. Like Zach said, first off, the guy is still developing. Anthony Davis – last season, shot about 55% from two-pointers, despite the defense closing in on him and paying him more attention, averaged 24 points per game, 10 rebounds, led the league in blocks. And guess what? Now Alvin Gentry, the new coach of New Orleans, wants him to develop a three-point shot. This kid's a nightmare for any defense trying to stop him. So no, Anthony Davis will be one of the greatest players. We'll see. If he can stay healthy, which is an if, it's, you can never take that for granted. But he'll be great, and he's worth the money. It's a steal at this point.
And I think right now the pressure now is put on the upper management to surround the necessary pieces for this squad to be successful. Because anytime you have a franchise player like that, I mean, we all know you can't win an NBA championship by yourself. I mean, you saw that with LeBron James this season. I mean, if he had the pieces in Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, I mean, hey. I think Cleveland wins that series, in my opinion. I mean, you could also counter that argument with Golden State. They had an unbelievable squad this year and were very well-deserving. But LeBron James basically did it by himself, and that still wasn't enough. So it's going to be interesting to see the pieces they surround around Anthony Davis. And, again, yeah, you know, with the free agent period starting ideally today, we'll see what type of moves they make. Have you been keeping your ear close to the rumor mill? Are they expected to make any big moves here, Isaac?
I have. Well, the Pelicans are a little bit tight on cap, assuming they re-sign Omer Sheikh. They only have about $3 million of maneuverable cap room. But the next free agent market, when the cap takes a big jump, they're expected to make tons of moves. And considering that Anthony Davis is here until 2020, and from ages 24 to 29, that's the most impressive part of it. Right in his prime, the Pelicans have plenty of time to win themselves a championship and get a few players.
There you have that. All right, well, we have come to the moment here on WKR's Current Sports. We have to say goodbye. I want to give a special shout-out and thanks to all of you for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. Also, Zach Barrett, sports reporter and anchor at WILX TV 10. As always, take care, have one fantastic hump day, and be easy, people.